Right. So if I'm misaligned with something I'm being asked to do, who else might be in a better position or might be in her case, the better person to share this message? Because if she couldn't get her head wrapped around it and she was still trying to deliver that message, obviously it's not going to come out in a way that's authentic or builds her credibility. And so when we have to realign, to step back and ask ourselves, not how am I going to get this done always, but who else might be in a position to support this type of work?
Welcome to You Belong in the C-Suite podcast. You are ambitious in life and in your career, but something is missing. You want to bring more of your passion to what you do. Because let's be honest, you pour a ton into your work and it needs to mean more. I'm your host, Laura Eigel. I'm a mom, wife, PhD, coach, advocate, introvert, and indoor rowing fanatic. I'm passionate about living a life that's in line with my values. We'll give you the actionable tips and tools you need to lead with your values, make a difference, and have career success. The world needs more diversity and authenticity in the top jobs at organizations. Your leadership belongs there. You belong in the C-suite. What gets you up in the morning? What drives your decisions? What do you stand for? No idea, not even sure where to start? I use my values to guide my life and career. It's the basis of how I've built boundaries for myself and stuck to them. Are you ready to dig into what matters to you? Go to thecatchgroup.com to download your free values worksheet. That's thecatchgroup.com to download your free values worksheet to get to your core values and take action on what matters most. Welcome to this week's episode of the You Belong in the C-Suite podcast. Today, we are talking about values alignment, or really misalignment, with our guest, Karen Edwards. As the founder and CEO of Bloom Coaching, Karen takes an evidence-based approach to bringing professional coaching and personal development to leaders so they can take control of their future. Her work is rooted in her experience working in organizations for over 25 years as a senior leader. She has a solid understanding of what leaders experience and also understands what organizations are looking for in their top leaders. In her work as an executive and leadership coach, Karen has helped executives, senior leaders, and purpose-driven professionals take their life and career to the next level. She was accepted into Forefront, a selective accelerator program for rising stars in the leadership development field, where she receives mentorship and teaching from the number one leadership thinker, Marshall Goldsmith, and other top coaches. In our discussion, we talked about Karen's career journey and pivotal moments that led her to her career as an executive coach. Then we dug into our topic for today's discussion, values alignment. We discussed the struggles that she's seeing with the leaders that she coaches and tactics to work through those situations. Specifically, we talked about the pitfalls of being labeled as a certain way as a leader and tactics to overcome that, including owning your own narrative. Karen also discusses the skill of road mapping for your team and why being a facilitator as a leader is an important competency. I know you'll learn a ton from our discussion. Let's get started. Well, I want to welcome you to the You Belong in the C-Suite podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today, Karen.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Well, I love when we can get another coach on the podcast. Today, we are going to talk about values alignment or really misalignment. And that is kind of my favorite thing to talk about. So I'm really excited that we're going to talk shop here a little bit later. But before we get into our topic, I want to hear a little bit more about you. Tell me more about career history, kind of pivotal moments, and teach us more about what kind of got to you to this point in your career.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me. So I have been in organizations for 25 years. I am really a true talent person. So I've spent my time in organizational development, learning and development. I had some operational leadership roles back earlier in my career. But I think what launched me into this was when I was a kid, I was actually diagnosed with pretty severe learning disabilities. And I went through special education through most of elementary school. And so that sort of left me with this feeling of there's something wrong, right? Like you're not enough. You can't compete the way that other people compete, whether it was education or what have you. And so that really propelled me to being a lifelong learner. I think it's one of my top values is learning. And to the point where I think the success of that is you go from being in special education to getting a PhD, and that there's so many different ways that we learn. So that really has helped me also empathize with different challenges that people bring that sort of are at that core of I'm not enough. I don't have what it takes to help them realize that there's something unique about each and every one of us. So that's a little bit about me and what has launched me to where I am today.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. You mentioned a value of kind of lifelong learning. What are some of your other values?
Well, I think, you know, what's interesting is as I get older, one of my top values is health, because I've come to realize, I think you sort of take it for granted when you're younger that you'll be healthy. And as you get older, you know, I'm not ashamed to say, you know, where I'm at in life, but, you know, I'm in my mid 50s. And as you start to get into that zone, you realize you can't do a whole lot else if you're not healthy. You know, especially when you're an entrepreneur, you run your own business. If you don't get sick days, you know, you don't... all that kind of thing. And so staying healthy has really risen to the top of my list of values. I think, you know, some of the other ones that come to mind are around being a supportive person. You know, I that's something, I don't know what value that aligns with most. I have to go back and look at my list, but that's something that I really feel like I am talented at with other people in my life, whether that's my family or my friends, is just helping them figure out what's best for them and not dictating what's best for them. So those are a few that are I value.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. So tell me more about kind of career and talent development and now specifically as a coach. What was that like for you? And tell me how you made that transition.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. The only thing I regret about not leaving corporate or leaving corporate America was not doing it sooner. You know, I was... I think I'm much more effective looking at the outside in, because, you know, when you're part of the like the fabric of an organization, it's just harder to make an impact, I think, because you get into all the hierarchies and who you can talk to and who you can't talk to. And sitting on the outside of an organization, you can just see things so much more clearly as you're evaluating and helping them figure out what to do next. So, you know, what it was like for me when I worked within organizations is I felt, and the only word I can come up with is oppressive, you know, where I really didn't get to shine like all of my talent. I look back and laugh now, but it was really frustrating at the time, right? Because it always felt like there was a hurdle or a barrier. And a lot of times it was reinforcing that little kid in me that was like, you're not good enough. You don't have what it takes. And what it finally broke through was I went through this process of, as you know, the pain and strain of going to higher education. There's a lot of hurdles and obstacles that you have to go through. And it was very resilience building to go through that process. And I think that gave me the courage. And then COVID happened. And I was like, you know, things can change drastically. And I don't know that I want to do this anymore. And so it was terrifying to start my own business. I mean, I'm not much of a risk taker, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't say that, but I would say at the time, right? But and people who know me at that time, I mean, I was a mess. And I think, I learned a lot along the way. I had a lot of help. I had a lot of really good friends and advisors and mentors that helped me figure out. And I like now I wouldn't go back. It would take a lot for me to go back into an organization.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I started my career in consulting, didn't love it because I didn't see like the end result, like just going in and out of organizations. Like it felt like, oh, there's much more that I'm not seeing. So then I built my career internally and did love that for a while. And then, you know, had a career there similar in organizational development, talent management, that kind of thing, learning and development, and then moved into a leadership position in the C-suite for a smaller organization. And then again, same COVID, and you're just like, I don't know about this. And then now and then making that decision to really, it seemed like you too, kind of having a values misalignment in corporate and deciding to follow my values in terms of continuing that growth and development for leaders and building my company as well. And so that shift for me, now I'm on the other side. I also do consulting, and you absolutely see it. You can see that organization differently. And what I love now is that I can bring my expertise of being inside those organizations, but then also having clients that are a little bit more long-term within some of these organizations. And a couple of them have said, hey, when are you going to come work for us full time? And I'm like, never, with a huge smile on my face. I love you all, but I also want to do lots of other things too. So I love the task variety. I love seeing leaders and organizations still thrive, helping them with their cultures, but also help the leaders navigate within those organizations with this a little bit more holistic and objective perspective that you kind of get from seeing it from the outside. So completely, completely see some of the similarities and some of our backgrounds as well. Yeah.
I will just add, for people that I've worked with in the past, you have to have that lived experience, right? I do think in order for me to be as effective as I am now, I have to have gone through some of the, so I appreciate all of those learnings and lessons and frustrations. And it's really helpful for me because I can completely understand and empathize with a client when they're talking about those different things. So I wouldn't trade it. I don't think would be the right path for me going forward. Like you said, it would be a monumental thing for me to go back inside an organization.
Yeah. But like you said, that experience that you had, you know, living what it was like to be in corporate, I think makes you and I really good coaches now, right? Because we've seen how organizations work from a talent management perspective. We've been in those roles. We understand how organizations build talent. And now we can help others navigate some of those big systems while also knowing what it was like to live in those systems. So completely agree. Just this idea of being executives and organizations, I think absolutely makes a better coach, consultant on the other side as well. And so I'd love to kind of shift our conversation into kind of what you're seeing right now in terms of this misalignment of values or just misalignment in situations. I think sometimes we think it's all or nothing, like I have to leave a job, and that's just not the case. I don't think there's often times where I'm working with a client and it's a shift in perspective. It's a shift in how they show up in different ways, what they do, what they don't do. And that change and understanding how they can still fit within the systems that they're currently in is also work that people do. And so I'd love to talk about your experience with that, with the folks that you're coaching and what you're seeing.
You know, it's interesting. When you were coming up for me, there's an article I read years and years ago that said that leaders typically walk into one of two situations. They walk into either a turnaround or growth. And I feel like that's the same thing when people come to coaching. Their organizations, I'm usually a coach with an organization where somebody's being sponsored. And they're either asking that person to shift in some way, or they're asking them to really push and grow into a new area. And so I wanted to talk through a few examples of things that I'm noticing where leaders are struggling with some of these asks that they have of themselves, and want to give you a few specific examples. The first one that comes to mind is a leader that was asked to do a presentation of information out to an organization. And there was part of the information that she was completely misaligned with. She did not agree that this part of the information was being omitted. And because she felt compelled to be the one to deliver the message, she went ahead and did the presentation, and it didn't go well. It flopped, more or less. She got a lot of negative feedback. It was years ago, and people still remember it to this day and are bringing it up because, you know, her credibility was really not there, right? She wasn't being authentic. And so when we were coaching through it, it was sort of asking yourself the question of who, not how, right? So if I'm misaligned with something I'm being asked to do, who else might be in a better position or might be in her case, the better person to share this message? Because if she couldn't get her head wrapped around it and she was still trying to deliver that message, obviously it's not going to come out in a way that's authentic or builds her credibility. And so when we have to realign, to step back and ask ourselves, not how am I going to get this done always, but who else might be in a position to support this type of work? So that's the first one that I wanted to give some practical things that when you do get challenged with the values, when you know your value is being misplaced or misaligned, of what do you do, right? What are some like specific techniques that you can use? Has that ever happened to you, Laura?
Yeah, I feel like through clients, and then I can think of a couple of times myself, but most recently, I think the biggest theme has come up with clients in the return to office, where I know it's like return to office. It's as if everybody's just trying to figure this out and we didn't have time to plan it. And so I think there's a lot of leaders that maybe are leading teams where they prefer to be in the office and it's fine. And then others that are leading decentralized teams where they don't actually have to be in the office, or they had to hire different people in these circumstances, and now it's a different circumstance. And so in that case, I have found a lot of leaders struggling with how do you talk about it when they don't completely or fundamentally agree with it. And the thing that's come up is, you know, they know that they saw lots of people do really great work, not being in the office 3 days a week or whatever it is now. And how do they, you know, lead and have a change management strategy for something they don't fundamentally believe in? And that's been a struggle for a lot of leaders. And so for that, there's been some mindset shifts. There's been some, I don't know. I think they have to go through their own kind of change management cycle, their own grief cycle, their own like, okay, well, how does this align back to the organization? Those kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great one, because it is such a triggering topic for many organizations, for many leaders, because it's like a clash of values right there, right? Of some leaders believe that you get more collaboration. There's a disparity that's being studied now around if you are face to face, do you get promoted more often, right? The effects of recency and familiarity and all those biases that come into play, where people who work remotely, whether it's through volunteering for that or not, you know, may not have those opportunities. And then I was listening to, I think it was NPR one day, I was driving home, and they're talking about there's more participation in the workforce now because of remote and flex work. So there's like all these pluses, and just like anything, right? There's all these pluses and minuses, and yet people have such strong feelings about that particular topic, for sure.
Yeah. So I think that one has been a struggle. And so for those clients, I think it's okay, what is the reason behind it? So I have one company who a couple of leaders there's a policy, but like nobody really adheres to the policy, right? And so it's really up to the senior leader. And so they're not worried about the policy. They're more worried about, or they're, what they're struggling with is the lack of standardization of like, so that when you think about it, it's less about their clash of the values is less about flexibility, and the clash is more about accountability. And so as they were thinking about their values, we really dug into it. They were thinking, well, I'm have a hard time with this value. I'm like, well, is it really that? Like, tell me more. And when we got down to it, it's really about the accountability of the policy. If everybody was treated in the same way, I think they would have felt more differently about it. But this policy, not so much. And so we dug into, okay, well, what does that look like? And what could that mean? Are you seeing it in other places, not just this one? And so that we can go on and on about that, but just this idea of what value is it, and why is it important to you? And how could you then impact that as a leader? And does that matter more short-term versus long-term? What other things does it intersect with?
Well, the word that comes up for me or value is equity. Right? Because sometimes it's also like some people moved away and now they're not even living near the company headquarters, right? And there's all these one-offs and exceptions and et cetera, et cetera. And so the concept of equity is broader than just that topic, to your point, right? In what other ways is there potentially inequity happening in the organization? And is there a bigger challenge to deal with that's outside of that particular topic? So that's awesome. And I think, you know, it leads me to my second one, right? Which is around this idea around labels. Because sometimes, you know, people who work at home might have a positive label or a not so positive label. People who work in the office might have a positive label or a not so positive label. But what I've been noticing in coaching, especially female leaders, is people are putting labels on them to say things like, in an organization that's moving really fast, for example, if you have somebody that's really planful and it's a pressure prompted environment, they get labeled as slowing things down, as being, you know, being a planner is a negative in that environment. And so I'm working with a lot of women on how do you challenge those labels when they get put on you, right? So how do you push back and say, you know, actually, I can flex. I'm a flexible person. And I've shown many times in many instances where I've been able to move and flow with the and to call out when people are putting a label on you, so that it doesn't become part of your reputation. Because impression management is such an important aspect of being a successful leader. And that's one that I'm just picking up on over and over again, or people are in these situations where they're kind of being put into a box. And if you don't control the box and you don't push out of that box, the box is going to define how far you go in your career.
Yeah, I love that advice in terms of owning the narrative of the kind of leader and the kind of person that you are. And it is absolutely acceptable to tell people your style and what you do. And even preemptively, it's like, so for myself, for many years, I thought like, I have to say the thing, I'm an introvert, right? And I process information. And for many years, I got the feedback that I'm not contributing in meetings, like in the moment, right? And so I'd have all these thoughts after, and I would tell that to my manager and like all this stuff. And she'd say, Laura, you need to talk in the meeting. And so I started doing that, but in a different way. But then I also started telling people how I think. Like, I am putting things together. So this isn't a full thought, but here's the thing that's coming to mind. And I would say the thing, or I would just ask the question. But I like to tell people how I preferred, if I could get something in advance or follow up with any notes after, because some of those ideas were better than the one that I would have in the meeting, right? And so by telling people I'm thinking through this, or I'm very planful, or whatever it is, you can teach people how you make decisions. And over time, to your point, that's your brand. That's how people started bringing me different data in different ways, not just presenting it all in the meeting and hoping for like this epiphany, right? So I think depending on the situation, you can also tell people your style, and to your point, point out those examples of when you are that or are not that, whatever the example might be.
You know, it's interesting. Like, there's two types of people in corporate. This used to happen to me. I'm also that way. I'm more contemplative and will take time to think through things. And the conversation, by the time I was ready to interject something, was already onto something else, right? Because and the world rewards extroverts, right? So there's thinker talkers and there's talker thinkers. And the world loves it when people just are brilliant in the moment. Like, I was brilliant in the car on the way home. I'd be like, oh, I could have said this. Oh, I could have said that, right? And I just wasn't brilliant in the moment, but we have to look for different types of brilliance. And you can do those things. I call it signaling language in communication studies. They call it signaling, where you're saying, you know, you're giving people a heads up that this is what I need. This is what I'm noticing, and give them a roadmap and a framework for how you work. But also, I think what's really important is don't accept the labels that people put. Like, if you notice a label comes at you and it really hits you the wrong way, like that's a signal that you need to talk about that one and say, well, actually, I'm not always that way, right? I'm not always planful. There are times when I'm easily flexing and going in the moment. There are times when I have contributed in the meeting. And most of the time, however, I'm thoughtful and I like to think before I speak. And challenge those things so that your reputation and relationship with other people improves as a result of that.
My award-winning book, Values First,
How Knowing Your Core Beliefs Can Get You the Life and Career You Want is now available in audiobook. Since the book released just last year, the biggest question that I've gotten from readers is it available in audiobook? In this book, you'll get to hear my most pivotal career stories and some of the successes of my clients as you learn about the Values First framework and how you can take action on your life and career. The audiobook is narrated by me, so if you love this podcast, you'll love the audiobook. Values First, How Knowing Your Core Beliefs Can Get You the Life and Career You Want is now available on Audible and iTunes.
I love the idea that you can feel that tension. When somebody gives you a label that you do not resonate with, you know it, right? You know it. And it feels uncomfortable. It feels like, well, that's not who I am. Or maybe even, is that how people see me? And that's fine if it's feedback, but if it really doesn't feel right, I love that idea of challenging it. Often I would get the, oh, you're a shy, quiet person. And instead, how do you reframe that? And like, I like to take in data. I'm always listening, right? So instead, you're reframing kind of that's what it kind of looks like, but you're showing what you're really doing. And then helping each other out in the room too. I think I'm seeing a lot more of that, at least from women helping each other. There's still a lot of work that we need to do there, but just this idea of whose voice is being heard. I was facilitating a leadership program at a company that I consult at. And, you know, at the beginning of the training, we always say, hey, what are the ground rules that we should have? And there was a gentleman that said, I heard this somewhere and I'm just going to bring it up here. And he said, step up or step back. And I was like, tell me more about that. Step up or step back. He said, know when you are talking too much and step back, or invite somebody else to, or yourself, if you haven't stepped up, to engage in the conversation and step up. Either you step up yourself or invite somebody else to step up if you feel comfortable doing that. So I love this idea of everybody around you. What is your responsibility in the room to help your peers out, to be a really good peer, to be a good manager? Do you need to step back? Do you need to step up? Do you need to invite somebody else to step up?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm in my master facilitator class right now. And one of the things that I did in a session, because I, as an addition to being a coach, I also facilitate. Mm-hmm. And I do something similar, like the start. I'm like, if you're normally somebody who is an external processor and you really like to talk and you don't like it when it's quiet in the room and you'll jump in and fill in for me, don't feel like you have to. I am completely comfortable with silence. And I will wait for those folks that need to think about it a little bit longer. And also to those of you that normally sit back and are thinking and are pondering, I invite you to enter the conversation, right? And I may say, I'm going to wait for somebody who normally wouldn't take the opportunity to speak. I want you to have this opportunity. So giving them really designated spots to speak, I think, is another thing that we can do for each other. There's a statistic that say all kinds of data that says women actually get interrupted more often in meetings than men do as well. And so I think women supporting women and men supporting women is when somebody does get interrupted, whether it's a woman or a man, is to stop the room and say, wait a second, I don't think Laura was done with her point. Laura, can you continue your point? To stop that cycle of interrupting, because interrupting, you know, from the psychology side of it, first of all, from the just psychological safety side of it, is terrible, right? It does not invite psychological safety. The second thing it does is it gets the loudest voices keep talking, and they keep talking, and it sets this precedent that we can just keep interrupting each other. And for the person who got interrupted, our brains, we have to task switch. So we are going from speaking, and our thoughts are all organized in our mind, and we're ready to say the next thing, and somebody comes in with some interruption. Now you're task switching over to listening. And that's where we lose it. We're like, oh, now I lost my train of thought. What was I even? And when somebody does throw it back to you, you kind of forget what you were talking about, and you don't look as polished and, you know, all of those things. And so interrupting, if we could stop any bad behavior in corporate America, it would be interrupting, especially if you're the senior person in the room. you know, my advice to them always is, it comes a little bit from Simon Sinek, but speak less and speak last, so that you invite other people, because as soon as you share your opinion, you're going to shift the room towards that opinion just based on the power dynamic that's in the room as well.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That is so true. I think leaders, they forget as they climb the ranks, as their perspective is listened to more, of course, because of the, you know, they've gotten to where they are for a reason, hopefully, right? In their competence and strategy and all the things. But I think they forget the weight of their words. And they forget that they can shut some things down. They can shut it down with their opinion on something, with if they have a look on their face, if they don't, if they're paying attention, if they're not, who they ask, who they don't, like all the little things. But speaking first and often is one of those things that I think senior leaders sometimes lose their sense of self-awareness on. Because they're used to being asked what they think, and that's been rewarded for them so often. So I love that advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I also have a lot of empathy for senior leaders because they're not greeted with a lot of empathy in their roles, right? Once they get to that point, they don't get a lot of feedback about how they are because of people are concerned about their position. And they have a lot of pressure, right? And so it's both directions, right? They're being told on how to behave and how to do a lot of different things. But then also it's like, how do I show up, and how am I really authentically me is a question I often get by them. And the feedback that I give is, you know, I can't always be the same person in every single setting. And you have to decide where is it important for you to be quiet? Where is it important for you to give input at what time? And all of that becomes under a microscope when you're in that senior. People lose sleep over the things that senior leaders say, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. They think they might be saying that this thing is going to happen. And then they, you know, they just go with that train of thought and what that could mean for them. So what are you seeing leaders do that are more self-aware? These leaders in positions that are doing it not quote unquote right, but more consistently, what are they doing to do that?
Leaders that pop into my head right away. One of them does a great job of, I'll call it road mapping for their people. So they basically outline what does it take to be successful from their perspective very clearly. You know, not a bunch of like nuanced, you know, synergy words and stuff like that. It's like, specifically, what do I need to do to be a successful leader in this organization? That's one thing that I think is amazing, because it's not always clear, and culture is somewhat the unwritten rules of how we do things. And this leader is just laying it out and saying, this is what it looks like to me when someone's successful. Another leader is working on being more participatory in meetings. So some of the things that we've been talking about, but also things like inviting people into the conversation, right? Saying things like, Laura, I know you worked on this, you know, in a couple months ago. What's your suggestion here? And Dave, what would you disagree with what Laura just had to say? So they're really facilitating conversations instead of, you know, we got to get through this. They're opening up that divergent and convergent thinking. So what happens a lot of times in meetings and stuff is people open up for ideas, and then they too quickly start to go, well, that won't work. And this we've tried before, and that's too expensive. And they start shooting things down, as opposed to letting the team, you know, all ideas are welcome for a certain period of time. And then let the team kind of work through and converge on what's the decision. So I see leaders that are really doing it well, doing some of those types of things. Like, they're very versed in how to get the best out of people through communication is what I notice.
Yeah, I love that example, because I think often leaders do that. There is no bad idea, right? But then very clearly there is a bad idea, because they shoot it down, right? And so then there's not this skill of the facilitation of that there's really great intention of brainstorming and hearing everybody, but the facilitation of some of those things doesn't always go to plan. So that's where sometimes I see leaders that aren't so great at it. They'll just bring in somebody who is. And I think that's an option as well. But to build that skill, I think is something that can only make you a better leader, that facilitating of conversations through collaboration, empowerment, all of that kind of stuff that you just mentioned. I love it. Well, our time has gone by so quickly. Oh my goodness.
She has. Look at that. Wow.
I wanted to see what other closing thoughts that you had. Any other examples that you wanted to share with some of the things that you're seeing right now with leaders?
Things, you know, I see people doing a lot is they're striving for a certain title, right? It's like, I should be a SVP or I should be this. And, you know, the question in the back of my mind is, are you ready for that? Are you understanding the trade-offs that are involved with that particular role? And do you have all the experiences built up that you need, or are you just title chasing, right? And so I think really that's one of the things I'm noticing is helping people break down what is it that you really want and working through that. One of the things that I do is I call myself an evidence-based coach. So I use a lot of different types of assessments to help people understand where they are. Let's make a plan for where you want to go. And let's take a look at some of the psychometric assessments that can help you. Some of them are personality, some of them are value-based, some of them are 360s. You know, it just depends. I don't have a prescriptive one for each person. It depends on the person and what they're trying to accomplish and what the company is trying to accomplish for that person. But those are some other things that I'm noticing is really just assessing your level of readiness and also how do you know? And, you know, there's some instruments that can help you figure that out along with working with an effective coach. And I also, we were talking about this earlier, I think there's a coach for everybody out there. I am not the coach for everybody. Neither are you. Right. And so I think it's really important to find a coach that aligns with the things that are going to help you get where you want to go. And that means interviewing different coaches. I actually just wrote an article for T&D Magazine, which is ATD's professional publication for the Association for Talent Development, about how do you select an executive coach with my colleague, John Reed, who wrote a book about it. And so, you know, really taking a look at that. And then also, you know, if you're looking for an executive coach, you know, doing your homework a little bit and interviewing different people that have different approaches to helping you with where you want to go.
I love that advice. And I think that's just another example of what leaders are doing to become better leaders. They're working with people that can help them do that. And so more often I'm seeing organizations sponsor leadership development through coaching or leaders funding that themselves. So I think both are happening even more, as especially as we're trying to build career to the next level. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thought leadership and for having a really great conversation today. I really loved getting to know you more and seeing kind of unveiling some of the things that you're seeing with some of the clients and organizations that you're working with. What is the best way that we can reach out to you or connect with you?
Yeah. So LinkedIn is probably the best way. So I know that'll be in the show notes on how to do that. That links off to my website, my email address and all that good stuff. So that's the best way to find me.
Awesome. Yeah. We will absolutely put all of your contact info in the show notes. Well, Karen, thank you again so, so much for being here today. And I just hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
I want to thank you so much for listening to the You Belong in the C-Suite podcast. If you are enjoying this content, please remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. By leaving a review, you are helping others find this content. We will be featuring 5-star reviews on air in upcoming episodes. Editing and support for the podcast is done by S&E Podcast Management. To get more tips and tools to help you live a life guided by your values, go to thecatchgroup.com. Keep your boundaries and take care.